Unveiling the secrets A-list copywriters use to make themselves and their clients millions. This is the Copywriters Podcast with your host, the world's greatest copywriting coach, David Garfinkel.
We're going to talk about winning the inner game of copywriting. And the way to do it is incredibly simple. Just have and maintain legitimate confidence in yourself and in what you're doing.
However,
building and keeping that confidence is a bit more complicated. There are a lot of things between our ears that get in the way of confidence. Sometimes they're obvious and sometimes, like you said, they're subtle. The good news is they're all fixable. Sometimes it's a quick fix and sometimes it takes a little longer. We're going to go over all of this today and give you some tools to win the inner game of copywriting. But first, some words to live by. Copy is powerful. You're responsible for how you use what you hear on this podcast. Most of the time, common sense is all you need. But if you make extreme claims and or if you're writing copy for offers in highly regulated industries like health, finance, business opportunity, you may want to get a legal review after you write and before you start using your copy. My larger clients do this all the time. Okay, so it starts like this. Your copy looks great on paper, but your spidey sense tells you something feels off. And then you find out it's not converting the way you expected. What's going on? Could be that you have deep underlying doubts about yourself, about the copy, about the product you're writing about, any or all of those things. And what happened was your own doubts found their way into your writing. Unfortunately, this is not just a touchy-feely pop psychology thing. It's real. And for a copywriter, those doubts can end up costing your clients thousands of dollars in lost sales and you in losing a client. Why these doubts are so dangerous is that your readers can sense your uncertainty, even if you can't, at least not right away. Readers will sense it and react to it, and not in a good way either. What makes this even trickier is it's not always about the words you use. It's more like you're broadcasting to their instinct, a subconscious signal that something isn't right. They won't know what it is, but they feel the first spasm of doubt, and then there's a chain reaction. The doubt triggers their own skepticism. They put up red flags, and when they otherwise would have bought, well, they don't. Okay, now, as a consumer, you've probably had an experience like this yourself. When you look at a sales page and it feels off, even though the headline was strong and the benefits were clear and the product was something you otherwise would have wanted, you know, it's the same kind of feeling you get when someone tells you a story, but you have this sneaking suspicion that they don't really believe the story themselves. You notice it right away, and you become cautious about believing anything else the person is telling you. When you're writing, your inner doubts can show up in subtle ways. Maybe you soften your claims more than you need to, or maybe you over-explain when it would have been more effective to be concise and simple. Sometimes you hold back on your enthusiasm to avoid potential criticism, putting your protective ego ahead of closing sales. All of these habits can end up costing you sales, and the cure is to write with more confidence. Now, the first step to solving this is awareness. You want to start by finding out where the signs of doubt creep into your copy. And we're going to talk about how to do this. And then from there, once you know what the problems are, we're going to look at what to do about it.
One pro tip before we jump into it. This is a rule that I've always lived by because I know this about myself. I just won't sell something if I don't believe in it. And that helps alleviate 90% of it for me.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I didn't really include that in here, but that's true. If you're selling something you don't believe in, you're like walking against the wind to begin with. All right. But the first thing you need to do, assuming you have a product that that you're on board with. Well, it's not unusual to have doubts creep into your head as you're writing copy, even for a product like that. Maybe you've heard these things from your inner voice. Am I being too pushy? Do I know enough about this topic? What if people reject my ideas? These thoughts definitely get in the way of your writing flow and can weaken your finished copy. But you can fight back against these thoughts and win. Let's start with the fear of being too pushy. So this has to do maybe with how you look at selling in general. Instead of thinking of selling as a form of pressuring people into making decisions they really don't want to make, think about offering them a real solution to a real problem. After all, when you genuinely want to help someone, confidently presenting a solution is not being pushy, it's being helpful. That simple reframe can help you get rid of the first doubt. Now, what about past failures? Everyone's tried something that didn't work out. And we've all had at least one client who wasn't happy with our results. These things simply happen, that's all. But don't make past failures be a reason to make you hesitate. Use them as lessons. If you're going to write copy, no matter how good you are, you'll have failures. The key is to realize that every failure teaches you what works and what doesn't, if you have the guts to look the failure in the eye and figure out what went wrong. Here's another big confidence crusher, imposter syndrome. Here's what you need to remember. You may be putting too much pressure on yourself. You don't have to be an expert on every aspect of the product and the niche. You just need to understand your prospect's problem and how your product solves it well enough to describe both in a way that resonates with your prospect. One way to work through some of these blocks is to actually start writing down your fears. Not the most fun thing in the world, but immensely helpful. Then go through your list one by one. Ask yourself, is this fear protecting my readers or is it protecting me? Here's what you'll find. Most of the time, fears are about your comfort, not about what's best for your product. Most of the times, fears are about your comfort, not about what's best for your prospect. Now think about this. If you believe in the product, holding back doesn't help anyone. It could stop someone from solving a problem or improving their life. When you see your role this way, these internal blocks start to disappear, and writing with confidence becomes a lot easier.
I don't remember who I first heard this from, but I heard the saying, and this really changed the way that I approach selling in general, which was, if you really believe that what you have to offer can improve the lives of the people that you're trying to reach, you have an obligation to do everything you can to convince them to buy. And that goes along with this, and that was like a powerful reframe for me.
Yeah, I think it sounds a lot like Jay Abraham. I mean, he might have used different words, but that sounds an awful lot like his philosophy. Anyway, regardless of who said it, I agree. All right, let's go on to developing confidence in your voice, your writing voice. Think of the tone you use when writing with absolute confidence and belief. It's the voice that earns trust, and it's the voice that drives action. You've probably felt it before, those moments of natural passion when you're talking about something you truly believe in. Your words flow effortlessly. Your energy is undeniable. The key is capturing that same energy in your writing. And the good news, you don't have to force it. Your voice of confidence is not about being loud or aggressive or manufacturing claims because you're nervous that the truth isn't good enough. Writing with a voice of confidence leads to writing with the same certainty you feel when explaining something you know is true. So how do you build this voice of confidence? It's simple. It starts with understanding your client's product or service on a deep level. Go beyond the specs and features and benefits. Ask your client some context questions like, what inspired you to create this product? What customer stories stand out to you? How does this product change lives? What you hear in these conversations will give you fuel for writing with confidence. The enthusiasm in your client's voice naturally transfers to your copy. Then, identify weak spots in your own voice. Sometimes we unknowingly add phrases that undermine confidence, words like, just might only, hopefully, sneak in and signal uncertainty. For example, this product might save you time versus this product saves you time. The first one feels hesitant. The second is clear and confident. Now, you can only say it if you believe it and have done the research and the thinking to develop a sense of conviction in yourself about the product. One way to find problem areas is to read your copy out loud. Mark the spots where you sound unsure or hesitant. Rewrite those parts with the same certainty you use when talking about something you truly believe in. Look at it this way. Your voice of confidence is clear, purposeful, and grounded. Think about how you'd recommend a restaurant to a friend. You wouldn't say, "You might like this place." You'd say, "You got to try this place. It's really good." Natural enthusiasm shines through. It's your word choice, it's your tone, it's the structure of what you say. Nothing is forced. It's comfortable and easily real. Start writing your copy by focusing on the parts of the offer you feel most confident about. Maybe it's a feature you love or a customer story that stuck with you. The more you dig into the product, the more your belief grows. And that belief will show up in your writing. You're not creating a new voice. You're uncovering the confident voice you already use when talking about things you care about. This is a way to remove hesitation and hedging from your copy. When you write with confidence, readers can tell. And when they trust your confidence, they're much more likely to trust your message.
I kind of think of these as like weasel words or selling from the heel, backing off a little bit. And I notice a lot of times when it really stands out is when people go to close, when people go to make the final call to action is when I notice a lot of this stuff popping up.
Oh, and you know, I think the cause of that is the things we've talked about. You're protecting your ego, it might be a little uncomfortable. You haven't done enough research. You don't fully understand how valuable the product is. But the key thing is to look out for it and to replace it when you find it, right? Stop using the hero's journey in your sales copy. My book, The Persuasion Story Code, will help you put together stories that convince your prospects and resolve their objections. If you are a copywriter, you'll appreciate that every single one of the 25 kinds of stories in this book have been proven time and time again in profitable sales copy. But I've also used these kinds of stories to close 5- and 6-figure deals for my own business, and so have many of my clients. These stories are easy to create and easy to tell. They sound like ordinary conversation, but they are all designed and proven to lead to a yes. You can get the Persuasion Story Code on Amazon.com. So get your copy today. So let's talk about the language that you use, not just the individual words. Well, here we're going to talk about words, but in a different sense. There are a lot of words we were praised for in school and at sophisticated occasions and things that many people consider impressive, subtle distinctions. These things are death in copy. I'm talking about words like pretty, rather, quite, somewhat. You don't want these words in your copy because they can drain the power from your message without you realizing it. They definitely cloud it up because they make what you're saying feel vague instead of strong. For example, this product is pretty effective. What does pretty effective even mean? A much better way to say the same thing is simply, this product is effective. And it's even stronger to explain how or why it's effective, or under what circumstances it's effective, or for what purposes and for getting what results the product is effective. There are phrases like, I think, in my opinion, you could say, and these are good hedges in conversation to avoid being blamed for an unpopular opinion. And they're great for greasing the conversational wheels, but not so good in copy because these phrases act as shields to create unnecessary distance between you and your reader. Imagine saying, I think this tool could save you time. Now compare that to this tool saves you time. The difference is huge. Finally, don't use formal language that isn't very definitive. For example, you would never say, "It would appear that this solution might be beneficial." Compare that to, "This solution cuts your workload in half." Which one feels more confident? Exactly. Now, let's talk about dealing with objections. Instead of downplaying concerns, address them directly while staying strong. For example, "Even if you've tried other programs before, this system works differently because..." That builds trust by showing you understand their worries and believe in your offer. Here are a few more confidence killers to avoid. Qualifiers like "sort of" or "a bit." Apologies such as "I hate to bother you," but permission-seeking phrases like "if you don't mind." Passive voice like "it has been shown" instead of "tests prove." And hedging words like "hopefully" or "probably." When you say things like "to be honest," "I believe," "in my experience," in a sales message, you could be implying uncertainty. Now, I'm not saying remove those words from your vocabulary. In certain kinds of conversations and even content, they may be fine. Not in a sales message, though. Sometimes those phrases do work, but you've got to be careful. Look at the context. Also, make strong transitions. Instead of saying, "moving on to another point," connect your ideas directly. For example, "not only does this save you time, but it also reduces stress." Try to make sentences in your copy move your sales message forward, every single one of them. And be definite when you give instructions. Your readers aren't looking for hints. They want guidance and sometimes clear direction. When you believe in what you're selling, confidence comes naturally. And that confidence gives your readers permission to feel confident too.
That's so important. A lot of times when somebody is looking for a solution, it's because they don't feel confident in that particular area. They don't feel like they can solve the problem themselves. We talk as copywriters about how sales is the transfer of enthusiasm. But I think that what you're getting at here is sales is also the transfer of confidence.
Very much so. I've always loved transfer of enthusiasm. I think Zig Ziglar said that originally. But yeah, confidence, absolutely. It's really important. You know, in the most conservative, traditional forms of business, not like Google where people bring their dog to work, things like that, but in places where, you know, old school stuff, I maintain there's really only one word that's acceptable that describes emotions. Only one, and that's confidence. You don't go into the guy with the serious expression and the, you know, 10-mile long desk and say, "Sir, I'm feeling sad today." You just don't do it. But they do talk about confidence.
People that watch the videos are like, "But Nathan brings his cat to work."
Well, no one said we're the most conservative, old school, traditional business. And I love it when your cat gets up on your shoulders and starts contributing to the conversation non-verbally. I think that's cool. All right. So now let's get to the elephant in the room. We've been talking about your internal state, but this is still about your internal state, but it involves other people too, a little more. And that elephant in the room is criticism. It comes from clients, prospects, and sometimes even other copywriters. You can't avoid it, but you can choose how you handle it. Most people react to criticism in one of two ways. They either get defensive and dig in their heels, or they start doubting themselves and pulling back in their writing. However, there's a third way. It takes some practice and some mental discipline, but it's well worth the effort to develop it. And that's this. Instead of seeing criticism as an attack, treat it as information. Information, just information. Maybe good information, maybe bad information, but either way, just information, nothing personal. When you look at it that way, it's easier to use that feedback to improve. So here's some tips for handling criticism. Separate feedback about your writing in your mind from someone expressing judgment of you as a person. Now, there are these mind efforts that like to try and diminish you in the process, kind of move them out of your circle, you know. But very often feedback about your writing is about your writing. It's not about you as a person. Focus on specific points instead of vague complaints. And take a moment to notice who's giving you feedback and how much in the trenches experience they actually have themselves. Unless the feedback is a valid criticism of your overall approach that you understand, unless that's valid feedback, most feedback is more specific. When you make changes, keep your core message strong and consistent while adjusting other aspects of your copy. When clients push back on your copy, you don't have to fight with them, but be willing to ask questions to understand what they're saying better. What specifically bothers them? You might get important information about their product or their customers that you didn't know before. Don't assume that you know what they mean. Dig deeper. Do it in a pleasant, convivial, a way that's not confrontive, but just, you know, curious. Without getting defensive, ask a couple more questions so you can really understand what they're thinking and why. And show respect for what they say, even if you don't agree. Now, one mistake is to lose all your confidence after you get critical feedback. You might start adding qualifiers to your copy and softening your claims. But here's the thing, weak writing won't fix any problem. In fact, it usually creates new ones by making your message unclear or at the very least less persuasive. So put your discomfort aside and stay focused on the purpose of your copy, getting results for your client. As you start to make changes, ask yourself, will this change improve results? If the answer is yes, do it. If no, point out why and see if you can develop something different that will help you get better results. What you need to do is build resilience. This doesn't mean developing a thick skin or letting criticisms just roll off your back. What it does mean is you need to hear what people say and respond productively and proactively. To build resilience, try these ideas. Keep a file of positive feedback and successful results. Document what works in your copy. Test changes before simply settling into them. Most important, always remember why you wrote each element the way you did. Your confidence grows best when it's based on knowledge and results. The more you study your market and track your outcomes, the more solid ground you have to stand on. One more thing. Not all criticism is valid. Sometimes it comes from people who aren't your target audience or don't understand the principles of direct response marketing. In other words, people who know everything in the world but really don't know anything about copy. You don't need to let what they say shake your confidence. And remember, nearly all the time, criticism isn't about you. It's about the effectiveness of one specific piece of copy. When you handle criticism this way, you show clients that you care about what they say and you care about getting them results they want just as much. And that builds trust, improves results, and leads to long-term successful client relationships.
I think the word that was screaming out at me the whole time that you went over that didn't get mentioned is maturity. It takes a level of maturity to have that type of confidence in your work.
Well, I don't know why you're talking about maturity to a guy who's wearing a hat with two cartoon mice on it, but okay.
Yeah, okay. Point taken.
All right. And I agree with the essence of what you're saying. And so when I first started writing, I took a lot of things really personally. I can't say I'm like totally dispassionate now, but it's a lot easier for me to take things in stride. So yeah, it does take time. And point well taken. All right. Let's wrap this up with a quick recap of everything we covered. In section one, we explored the connection between confidence and copy. We learned how doubts can sneak into your writing and weaken your message. Things like over-explaining, unnecessary qualifiers, and apologetic tones that betray your uncertainty. The solution? Read your copy out loud. Listen for where you hesitate, where you rush, or where your tone changes. These could be the weak spots where your confidence needs to shine. Section two, we talked about internal blocks. how fears like being too pushy or not qualified enough hold us back. But when you shift your mindset from selling to helping people solve a problem, everything changes. And this approach helps you write with authority. Section 3, we talked about your confidence voice. This is how you talk about something you truly believe in. We talked about cutting words like just and might in your copy and replacing them with more direct, strong language. Section 4, we discovered how to eliminate weak language patterns. We talked about removing words like pretty and somewhat and replacing passive claims with active, specific statements. And finally, section 5, we explored how to handle criticism. The key is to understand criticism is data, not a personal attack. That way, you can use it to refine your copy without losing your confidence. When you balance confidence with openness to feedback, you create powerful, results-driven copy.
I like that word balance. A lot of times client work is kind of like a relationship with another business owner. And you can do the Debbie doormat where you let them just walk all over you. Or you can do the thing where you're just confrontational and you're fighting them about everything. But again, going back to that maturity, when you learn how to balance and know when is the appropriate response is when that client relationship really starts to thrive.
Totally agree. And, you know, it takes time. So you could look at this as a lesson plan or a medium-term set of goals. But, you know, the better your confidence, the better your copy and the better your life's going to be. Say that for sure.
All right, yeah. David, another fantastic episode, man. If you listening to this right now enjoyed this episode, you can go find it, the show notes for it, and 400 plus other episodes. Man, it's a little bit overwhelming. 400 plus other episodes over at copywriterspodcast.com. And until next time, we will catch you later.
Catch you later. Hey, did you enjoy today's show? Want to help get it into the ears of more listeners? Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app.
This is the Copy and Funnels Podcast Network.